Welcome to 5 Dubs by MDDC Press. I'm your host, Rebecca Snyder, the Executive Director of the Maryland, Delaware, and DC Press Association, which represents news media in our region. 5 Dubs focuses on the who, what, when, where, and why of local news media. We'll talk with the journalists about the stories behind the news. You can find more information about our guests in the show notes or on our website, www.5-dubs.com. Welcome. We are here today with Amanda and Annie from the Baltimore Sun. They'll get to introduce themselves in just a moment. And we're doing our showcase of Best Moves nominees of 2023. So this is part of MDDC's contest and awards celebration, which celebrates the best work in the region for journalism. And the Best Move category highlights the work that our members feel was their best move for the organization within the contest year. So first, Amanda, why don't you introduce yourself? Then we'll go with Annie and then talk about your best move.
Hi, thanks very much. My name is Amanda Kell, and I'm the Director of Enterprise and Investigations at the Baltimore Sun.
Terrific. And Annie?
Hi, I'm Annie Gentleman, and I'm a data reporter for the Baltimore Sun.
Wonderful. And your best move was very data-driven or data-driven. So why don't you all tell us what your best move was?
So with the Catholic abuse scandal in the Baltimore area really coming to a head last year, we broke news regarding the Attorney General's report, but we quickly realized that it only represented the Archdiocese of Baltimore. And while it expanded some understanding about the history of 8 decades of abuse by church employees and others affiliated with the church, and the diocesan efforts where they struggled to deal with the problem, we realized that immediately that had a lot of limitations, even as we continue to investigate and explore those who were cited in the report and fought to reveal their names, particularly breaking news on the names of the 5 church leaders who were responsible for making decisions about how the church responded to accusations. We knew that there was much more to understand. And then it came to something as old-fashioned as a tip to a beat reporter, but also something as modern as crowdsourcing. One of the names on our entry is Jonathan Pitts, who is a longtime enterprise reporter at The Sun and who is on our religion beat. He heard from a source that they had been keeping lists of people who they felt that were connected with allegations of abuse, and that they showed a much, much bigger picture. And
so, I want to check in there because it sounds like this really was a huge effort, you know, of course, in throughout the state of Maryland and across the nation, you know, everyone was roiling about the clergy abuse scandal, really. And of course, that's had far-reaching repercussions for the Catholic Church, not to mention the survivors of that abuse. And so when that broke and had just a specific focus, what was released was just about the Baltimore Archdiocese. Could you kind of peel apart for us the pieces? Because you have the Wilmington Diocese, I believe, and then the Greater Washington. And how do they all kind of fit together first?
Sure, that's a great question. So our first limitation that we wanted to address was, there's so much more than just Baltimore. And we also realized that here we are in the state of Maryland, The Child Victims Act has just been passed by the Maryland General Assembly and signed into law by the governor of Maryland. We need to look at the whole Maryland picture. And that includes the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C., which covers the suburban counties near Washington and also Southern Maryland, and the Diocese of Wilmington, Delaware, which covers the Eastern Shore parishes and institutions. That was definitely a starting place for us to say, we're under the same attorney general, we're under the same governor, we're under the same legislature, we're under the same law. We need to look at the whole Maryland picture. Sure. And that was definitely an important point and decision along the way to making the only searchable statewide database of people who had been accused of child abuse, who were connected with the church. Other limitations that previous lists or databases had not addressed. Some of the lists are very strict, like the Archdiocese list, which has evolved somewhat, but initially it was only priests and brothers. We wanted to address coaches, teachers, others who were part of the problem.
So then it sounds like you went wider and you went deeper. And so talk a little bit about the impact of that. I mean, there is the joy of completion to say, here's the entire state of Maryland. But what was the effect of having that kind of deep data dive on this topic?
We had readers and sources who were so keen for us to do this and to also for it to be done. One thing that we definitely worked through with them during this work was to say, oh, we're still working on it. We have to confirm it. We have to reach out to them. So some of the first reaction was like, even before it was complete, was, oh, where is it? When is it coming? What are you doing? We've heard you're doing something. We needed this years ago. Other lists aren't like this. And then when it was published, and we made a decision to have it outside our paywall, it remains outside our paywall. We have heard from readers and sources who have just said thank you in so many different ways, that it was important for them to see this, that they had heard about this person or that person. Now they felt seen, or they learned things that they hadn't known, or that a particular person on the list was in places that they had known a piece of what they were connected to, but now they knew more about that. Another thing that we realized that was important to do was that when the Catholic Church abuse scandal in the United States broke open the first time in 2002, as everybody knows from Spotlight, if you weren't here for the Globe's reporting the first time around, was that was 2002, and so much has changed since then. And there were institutions and advocates who were able to do lists and databases back then, but they had not been in a position to update them. And also that our, as a society, our understanding of abuse and allegations about abuse has really evolved to a different place. And there may have been people in the past who were not reported on because of different guidelines, different understandings that we had back then.
I'd love to talk, and this, Annie, you're sort of the architect of that database, and it sounds like you did a lot to pull it together. What goes into a project like that? It sounds like you had so many inputs, and a really avid fan base who was like looking for this information. So just a little extra pressure in terms of timing. But talk to us about like what goes into pulling something, a project like this together.
Yeah, it starts with definitely a lot of discussion about like what tools do we already have available that could present this for people. It's like early on, my editor and I had discussions about how like something like Data Wrapper probably wouldn't be sufficient for this because we wanted to have a lot more details and a lot more just text in it in general, and also more search bars and more filters. So we wanted the layout of it to be as good as possible. And as for the actual, like what we ended up doing, I kind of threw out the idea of just trying to develop it ourselves. So, I did like the front end work on this and, just formatted the data to go right into the database. It's not a perfect workflow, but I think like we really used what resources we had in the best way possible. And it turned out really great.
So I'm interested because earlier, I'm sorry, go ahead, Amanda. I was caught in my thought.
One thing that we had, that Annie mentioned when we were preparing for this meeting was the data itself as compiled by the reporters. We already mentioned Jonathan Pitts, but there's Cassidy Jensen and Maya Laura and Leah Russell, and they and many others across the newsroom. If you were not involved directly in this project, you were probably covering for someone who was. So they did first hours of research with church directories that showed where people were educated or posted, of course, archives of the Sun, but other publications, many, many cross-checks with archdiocese lists in other states, because one of the concerns that readers and sources had brought to us was, well, I know he was accused in Iowa, and he's on that list, but he went to seminary here, and he interned here, and I know that this was a problem when he was here. That was the research end of it for the reporters, which was a huge undertaking. And then it was knocking on doors, finding people's lawyers, trying to talk to anybody who we could, who in some cases might confirm that someone had now passed away, or not. And then we would have to redouble our efforts to try and contact all of the people who we considered including, and we were just talking about how at the last minute our final number was jumping up and down a little bit as to what the universe of what we could include would be. But ultimately we began with 155 names in the Attorney General's report. There were 47 names on the Archdiocese list. And thanks to our efforts, we were able to add so far 107 names for a total of 309 in the database right now. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of careful decision making there. For instance, there was one person who's been named in one of the reports who it was suggested that they themselves were molested as a child in the church. We've never been able to get that person to speak with us. But because potentially they are themselves a victim, we have never named them. Although we have included what the report said they were accused of, we have not named that person.
So it sounds like there has been like almost that it's an ongoing report because you're still the math part was a little hard for me, but there's still a few names that haven't been verified or found as you kind of triangulate between the Archdiocese report and the Attorney General's report and your own thinking. And so I wanted to ask about sort of the ongoing status about that. And I wanted to just really congratulate you on the reporting. So oftentimes when members of the public hear, oh, well, there's a list, you just think, oh, well, it's a, you know, it's the list. But what you have done to cross-reference, to verify, to find out, well, this has happened in another state, but this person was in the state of Maryland, that's an incredible amount of reporting and just doggedness. So in the newsroom, you're also covering stories every day, all the time. How did you kind of fit this in, and how did that work to do that kind of reporting, in-depth reporting on this?
Well, it definitely contributes to this taking months. But there was also a point where we had to look at ourselves and say, okay, it's time for the core group to just buckle down and do nothing else for several weeks. But it was months before that of chipping away at things in the background. And again, a much larger group of reporters than is at the top. I think we have a long credit line at the bottom to a lot of people who contributed.
So is it ongoing? I mean, are you still maybe not actively reporting, but keeping an ear out as things break and develop?
Absolutely. And the Attorney General's office also continues to investigate and say that they are trying to investigate the Maryland portions of the Washington Diocese and of the Wilmington Diocese. And so it's possible that there will be other names officially released in the future, and we would evaluate those again by our own standards and see who can be included in this understanding.
Mm-hmm. And so, Annie, I know you have the ability to show us the database. Can you talk about how people are using it? Is it more, you know, they're looking up a name or they're looking up an area? How does that work?
Yeah, let me just share my screen.
So for those people who are just listening, we do have this on our YouTube channel, MDDC Press, and you can see some of the information. And in the show notes, we'll put the URL to this website as well. So tell us what we're seeing.
Yeah. So ultimately, we ended up on a pretty like simple database with filters that you can look at all 309 names altogether. As well as filter by the new names that we've added and just the 155 from the Attorney General's report and just the 47 from the Archdiocese of Baltimore's list. We also, in terms of filtering, we decided to add an extra filter for people who wanted to filter out the accusation descriptions in case that was triggering. You do have to click to expand and read that, but we just wanted to provide the option. And then we also included a few different search fields and decided that this was going to be a very important part because a lot of people who might be searching for someone might only know that they worked at a certain seminary, or they might just know them as Brother Joe or Brother John. So like having a few search fields be optional was very important. And then ultimately the database came down to a few just basic things like title, name, the year that they were born, and the last known status, as well as what lists they're on. The lists includes any of the ones that we have filtered or that we have available to be filtered by, including the Attorney General's report and the Archdiocese of Baltimore's list. So I'm going to quickly go up to new names so we can kind of look through this one. So under the new names tab, This one will say like additional names published in 2023. We also have listed if they were in the Archdiocese of Washington's credibly accused list or Archdiocese of Wilmington.
Or an even more far-flung diocese. Mm-hmm.
So have you cross-referenced, I mean, in some ways this feels like it could be the beginnings of a really important national database in some ways. And of course, I know you're focused on Baltimore and the state of Maryland, but has there been any discussion or have other publications come knocking on your door to say, we'd like to do this in Chicago or Boston or something like that?
Our DMs are open. I'd love to hear from you. No, it's absolutely a national situation, and of course we've reported that the church sent people across the country for treatment. In other cases, people who were accused of something relocated themselves and hoped that they were in a new situation there. So California, Hawaii, the Midwest, the Northeast are all definitely tied into the reporting that we did.
Oh, that's, and it does, I love this last known status. So you can really see, okay, well, this is where that person is. And I would imagine for some survivors or people who, or even bystanders, just to know, that's what happened to that person. I can imagine that gives just a really strong sense of closure, or maybe galvanizes them to action to say, wow, why is that person still working in Philadelphia as of October of 2023, which kind of surprises me as well. Have you had people kind of take action based on the data that's coming out of this? You had said earlier that activists and others were really interested in that database. What did they then do with that information?
I think what we've heard is mostly that they are satisfied to see someone who they were concerned about represented here. If even as Annie says, all they felt able to do was to look up and say, there he is. He's on there. I feel like he's counted. Yeah. One thing as far as this across our area that was, I think we found particularly looking at the Diocese of Wilmington and understanding the Eastern Shore part of this, was in some cases, people's tie to Maryland was that they were now in a retirement community. Situation here, or that their final assignment had been at a nursing home, which they eventually became a resident of, as well as perhaps being, you know, nominally on the staff or attending services there. So that was another tie-in. And when our photographers went out to take photographs of some of the places that we were now adding to our understanding of the whole picture, it just really impressed upon me that there's a parish here in Salisbury, there's a nursing home in Cecil County, it's just so much bigger than one parish in Catonsville or something that a meeting that happened at the Archdiocese headquarters in downtown Baltimore.
Sure. Well, and it is because we're in such a not congested area, but a compact area, people move. And it is easy, you know, as you kind of go in these catchment areas to say, okay, well, now I'm in a different diocese. And those records are difficult to follow sometimes when you're going across bureaucracies and different lists and just making sure that things make sense and are sort of, you know, apples to apples comparisons. So as we kind of think through the impact and why this was your best move, it sounds also to me like this really was, it felt like this could have been a seismic shift in the way that you approach these kind of data reporting projects. Have you seen the effects of this type of reporting in other areas in your newsroom or other projects that you've worked on?
I definitely think so. I think there's a couple different like ways to report data stories in general, but I think one thing that has just become a very important part of data journalism is like the idea of building your own database when the data you want doesn't exist. And I think I've definitely been trying to think about that a lot more. And I know I've been approached by others who have been like, hey, what about this unique database? Because we don't have the data for that.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Annie.
I was just going to say, I think it's something that's very powerful too, when like creating something that people can just look through themselves. It's always a public service, just like using our tools to build something that doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. I think it is so powerful because it kind of brings power to the powerless in some ways. When you just have either an idea or like, oh, I wonder what happened to that person. They can now say, oh, well, I want to look at it in this way or that way. And I think also in terms of when we look at so many data sets under the Public Information Act and FOIA can be available, but they never quite tell you, they're just a really, sometimes a very narrow perspective because those data sets are created for a really specific purpose. And as a reporter, you know, kind of making those connections between those different data sets really like in those interstices brings out such a rich set of information and connections. And so I love to see this type of work kind of coming to the forefront. And, you know, I think also in a piece like this, and I'd like to end with understanding how you humanize these data sets. So this is a database full of stories in some ways. And so I would love to better understand how you tell the story outside of the data, because sometimes it's difficult to not be overwhelmed by the sheer number and the lists and the stats.
Well, that's a great question, because when we were in the closing days of getting this ready, we all thought, well, the data is the story. The data is the main bar. That's the big piece. And it's true. But we also went back to our beginnings with our human at the beginning, which was Frank Engel, the aggregator, who got us started on this path with his lists. And we told his story as part of the publication of the database, that he was Cadwal grad, says that he is not a survivor of abuse, but became very upset 20 years ago when the abuse scandal first broke in the U.S. about what had happened in the world of his church, and he began keeping these lists. So that's where our story started with Frank. Then the stories of the people who had not felt like they were addressed by the Attorney General's report was another mm-hmm. important story to address. That was part of our database when we published the database. And then, of course, the people who were suffering because they had suffered abuse by someone and they hadn't realized all that person's other connections to other parishes and other schools.
Well, that's very powerful. Well, I appreciate you guys coming out today to talk about the Baltimore Sun's best move. which was the Archdiocese Database, Church Abuse Database, done in 2023, ongoing, still updated. And I just appreciate you sharing your wisdom and your thoughts on this important issue. And I cannot wait to see what you all do for your best move in 2024. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to 5 Dubs with Rebecca Snyder. Please subscribe and leave us a 5-star review wherever you download your podcasts so that others can find us. What do you want to know about local journalism? Email me at rsnyder, S-N-Y-D-E-R, at mddcpress.com. Interested in supporting our podcast and journalism? Please donate to our 501c3 Press Foundation. Find out more and see the full episode list and show notes at www.5-dubs.com.